This is episode 399. Do you or your kids play football, rugby, ice hockey, maybe a bit of boxing or mixed martial arts, or even race go-karts like I do? Today we're talking about head injuries and brain trauma that happen in sport, which, without meaning to be alarmist, are actually of far greater concern and frequency than we might have ever previously known. I'm having this conversation today with Lisa Tarmaty, who is an anti-aging, longevity, high-performance go-to person. She runs a biohacking and alternative therapy clinic in New Zealand alongside a supplement formulation company. And she's someone that has used her knowledge to save her own mum from multiple catastrophic brain damage events. So if you'd like to keep playing sport yourself, or you want your kids to grow up having the fun that they want, then this episode is for you, because we talk about head trauma in detail, which sports cause it the most, whether brain scans are helpful or not, how many weeks or months you should be worried about secondary consequences, and which supplements to take before and after head trauma or concussions that help heal the brain. There's so much goodness in this episode, so let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Great to have you here. Now, just before we start, I want you to know that this year it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. The links to find out more are in the show notes and the caption down below. So with us today, we have ultramarathon runner and endurance athlete Lisa Tarmaty. Lisa is an extremely well-informed biohacking expert, as well as a 2-time best-selling author and the host of the Pushing the Limits podcast. Lisa formerly appeared on episode 253 of this show, chatting about alternative cancer treatments that she took her mum through. And now we're back today to talk head injuries in sport. So Lisa, welcome back. What's going on?
Wonderful, my mate. How are you? I'm so stoked to be on your show again. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, you're so welcome. I can't believe we're almost at episode 400 and the last one you did was 253.
Wow, you are just pumping them out. They're amazing.
Time flies. But I guess the conversation we've been having in emails sort of over the last year about head injuries, All of this stems from me playing AFL football, and AFL being the Australian Football League rules for our international audience, because I had a head injury last year where I sort of was tackled and hit the ground, and it was in preseason. And I mentioned preseason because the ground was still really hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we hadn't hit winter, there hadn't been any rain, and it sort of took a few seconds for my brain to catch up with reality. And I felt pretty weird after that. So there was definitely a bit of concussion there. And I emailed you. Mm. And also knowing that so many people that listen to this show are parents and have kids in sport that are doing reckless things that they are stressing out about all the time.
Yeah.
I thought it would be invaluable to get you on to have this conversation about head injuries in sport.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of my favorite topics to talk on and teach on, because it's just so under... We could be doing so much more than we are doing. For, you know, sitting in a dark room with your eyes shut for a couple of weeks is not going to cut the mustard, right? And that's basically what you're told to do. You go to the hospital, they might do a CT scan if you have a concussion, which shows very little, by the way. It shows if you've got a major, major thing. It doesn't show any of the smaller things. And it doesn't show any of the inflammatory cascades, which we'll get into in a minute, what happens actually after you have a concussion. So when I see... you know, these in rugby and rugby league, which I love watching, by the way, you know, it's a great sport, but I do cringe when I see the guys get hit and I'm like, oh gosh, you know. The HIA, you know, they do those HIA assessments, head injury assessments. To my mind, absolute crap.
Yeah, right.
You are not going to know whether they have a brain injury. Maybe you'll see if they've got an absolute major, major thing going on, but this happens in the weeks following, in the months following. And, you know, I cringe when they put them back out on the field, because if you get knocked again when you've already just had a brain injury, you're in for double trouble. It's exponential damage. So, yeah, I do sort of question that sort of an approach. I mean, it's better than nothing. It's what they used to do. But
yeah,
it falls real short of where I would be doing if I was in charge, which I'm not.
Not yet.
I'll be doing a hell of a lot of things different, put it that way. Yeah.
So We're seeing, I know, in sort of professional sport, it's becoming public knowledge, and they talk about it on the television when you watch footy and rugby. Mm. These protocols, which you mentioned, these sort of head trauma protocols, but you're sort of suggesting that they're nowhere near enough in the sense that they don't pick up anything that's not major. Is that right?
Mm. Yeah, they're looking for, you know, like major things like, you know, your pupils, are they dilating one bigger than the other, you know, like your eyes tracking properly, you know, those sorts of things that they can pick up, right? And that's great. That's better than absolutely nothing for sure. But even when you go into the ED and they do a CT scan, that is not the, when, and you're told, oh, no, you know, you're okay. You haven't got a, you know, a hemorrhage going on, or you haven't got a major, major thing. You're okay. Go home, rest, and sit in a dark room. So you have the initial injury, Maddie. You have the initial tearing and ripping of neurons. You have, your brain is like, it's like a jello, right, in a bowl. And when you get any sort of a force, and you're accelerating, you're running, right, and then you hit a big dude in the rugby paddock and you stop, and your brain goes swoosh forward and smashes the front of the brain, maybe in the front of the skull, and then maybe it sloshes back and hits the other side, right? So it's like a jello in there. It's in this, it's got a pretty good protection mechanism, but it's, that velocity stopping, you know, that sudden stop, that whiplash is one of the types of injuries that you can have. Also, you know, an impact injury where you've got a bleed happening. What happens is the initial injury where you've got the tearing of axons and neurons that are actually physically damaged. But then you've got part two of the injury, and this is the thing you don't see straight away. This is the biochemical cascade of inflammatory cytokines and chemokines and things that happen after the event. And this can be minutes, days, weeks, months after the event. And sometimes this inflammatory cascade of biochemical changes in the brain stay with you. And they're the ones that really cause the long-term damage. So I'll give you an example. Like when my mum had, you know, I got into the space because of mum, and you know that story if you've listened to the first podcast. She, for those who didn't, she had an aneurysm and a massive stroke 9 years ago, and this is what catapulted me into this world of brain rehab and trying to help, left with massive brain damage. In the initial phase, she was still able, even when she had the initial bleed in the brain, for the first hours and even day, she was still able to talk. She was still able to communicate. She was still able to move her body. It was in the following 3 weeks where she started to go down and into coma and in and out of coma as the inflammation started to take over, the swelling started to take over. So if you think about a broken ankle, right, you say you broke your ankle, you've got the initial horrific, oh my God, pain. You've got that initial sort of like you've just broken something and the body's in shock and cortisol and all of that sort of stuff and adrenaline. Often you don't feel too much initially, and then the pain sets in, right? And that's the initial injury. But then you'll start to notice in the days following the swelling, the heat, the, you know, the legs doubles in size and all of that sort of thing that we see as inflammation. Well, that's going on in your brain, right? That's the days after, that's the weeks after. And so we won't know immediately. So when those guys come off for an HIA, they're not going to know immediately, is that process going on? And undoubtedly it will be to some degree.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a tiny, tiny leak in a boat and you've sort of got done a general scan of the boat and you're like, oh, it's just a little thing. But that obviously leak eventually sinks the ship, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's, you know, inflammation causes swelling, right? And the swelling, your brain is a fixed, your skull is a fixed thing, right? It's bone, right? It can't expand when we're adults, at least. And so it starts to expand in a confined space. So then you start to damage and kill neurons, right? And this biochemical cascade that's happening, by biochemical, I mean there are, you would have heard of glutamate, for example.
Yep.
And if you go to a Chinese restaurant and you eat monosodium glutamate, which is often used in Asian cooking, for example.
Yeah, good old MSG.
Yeah, which tastes fabulous, right? But yes, it causes excitotoxicity, right? It's glutamate causes the neurons to start firing, and that's why you can get headaches. It's inflammation going on in the brain, right? It's why we try to avoid MSG, because it's going to cause brain damage, right? And but that's going to happen after an injury. You're going to get excitotoxicity happening. You're going to get a flood of glutamate, and it causes the neurons to fire. you know, putting it just very simplified without getting too sciencey.
Yeah.
It's causing the neurons to just fire. So excitotoxic, it's excito, they're overexcited. And the GABA system sort of goes offline, right? And you don't have that calming part of that, those pathways happening. And so that can end up with a point that the neurons actually fire themselves to death. They're just so going so hard, right? And all of this is happening over a period of time, right? And then you can come in, though, with things that put out the fire, because this is a fire that's raging in your head. What I would like to see happen in sports especially is that our sports people are given supplements prior to getting on the field that protect their brain should they get a brain injury. And these are things like plasmalogens, which I'll explain in a little bit, fish oils, N-acetylcysteine, fatty 15, which is a carbon 15 fat. There's mostly fats, really, because our brain is 70% fat. And we can put some of these things, N-acetylcysteine is not, it's a precursor to glutathione, and antioxidant support and things like this that we can put into the mix in order to try to help protect the brain. And certainly straight after an injury, you want to be doing a whole brain injury protocol. And, you know, we can get into what, you know, that could look like. There's different variations of what you can add in. But what we're trying to do is to put the fire back out and give the brain the milieu to rehabilitate and to calm down, to calm that inflammatory response down, and then to repair, okay? Because the brain doesn't just repair itself. You have to be proactive in that. So one of the things that is good is if you do get a brain injury, they used to say just sit in a dark room for a couple of weeks, right? Now we're saying actually you need exercise, maybe not the day of the events because you may be nauseous, you may have, you know, dizziness and all of that sort of stuff. And it, of course, this depends on how bad you are. Obviously, if you're in the ICU, you're not going to be exercising. But if you've had a minor brain trauma and you've had a concussion, then getting on an exercise cycle the next day or doing some sort of safe exercise where you're getting the blood flow going, you will repair much, much quicker than the person who goes and lies in a dark room, right? Because it's blood flow. And blood flow is going to help with that repair and getting the nutrients to the brain and so on and so forth. So exercise is a piece of that puzzle. And then, yeah, the supplementation protocols that we can put in. One of the other major things that happens, Maddie, is about 60% of people with brain injuries get a leaky, who have a leaky brain, blood-brain barrier. So we have a brain, it's called the BBB, the blood-brain barrier, and it's the barrier between the brain and the rest of the circulation. And this is a very tightly controlled barrier. Our barriers in our body are actually, I'd love to talk about our barriers because these are really important for protecting us from outside influences. Like we have barriers in our gut, in our mouth, in our esophagus, in our eyes, anything that interfaces either with the outside world or between compartments, between like the blood-brain barrier, right, and the circulation. And all of these barriers, they're very, very thin. They're like a paper towel thin, one cell thick usually, and they can get damaged. And we've all heard of leaky gut, right?
Yeah.
Well-known problem that causes accelerated aging, degeneration of organs, autoimmune, blah, blah, blah. Well, the same thing happens in our brain. We can get a leaky blood-brain barrier where things get into the brain that shouldn't be and things get out that shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And this often happens after an injury, whether it's because of the mechanical tearing of it or because of this biochemical breakdown of the barrier that's happening. When you have, there's a statistic, 60% of people who have a leaky blood-brain barrier within hours after having a brain injury will have a leaky gut. The gut-brain axis, you would have heard of, you know, talked of many times that this is your second brain is your gut. And that's because it is literally the second brain. They're actually neurons and there's the vagal nerve that was like a communication highway between the brain up and down. So we're talking backwards and forwards between the brain and the gut. And these two are very interconnected. So a lot of people end up with leaky gut. So if I'm doing a really good workout with someone with a brain injury, if I can, I would be looking at a microbiome assessment as well.
Because, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, because we want to make sure that person hasn't got any sort of issues going on, especially if it's been going on for a while, right? That they haven't got leaky gut, that their zonulin levels are not too high, which is a marker that we look on microbiome tests to see whether you've got a leaky gut or not. A leaky gut is when the tight junctions that are, there's one cell thick in the gut, pull apart. I'm sort of making a, with my hands here, for those listening on the podcast. It's like a weave that's being pulled apart, right? And then it's got sort of gaps in between. And when we get a leaky gut, we can get pathogens, undigested foods, things that cause immune triggers passing through into the circulation that shouldn't be there. Bacteria, you know, viruses, anything that's coming in on our food can get in easier. And also the food is not being broken down to its really tiny constituent parts before it passes into the circulation. And so, I mean, I'm telling you how to suck eggs. You're the nutritionist, but you know.
Well, something that was I was just thinking about was the fact that test would, for most people in the Western world that have got high wheat diets, high sugar diets, it's going to show you high levels of zonulin anyway.
Exactly, exactly. So most of us have a leaky gut, you know, or some degree of leaky gut. And so we're already predisposed then, right, to this issue. And this affects the brain, and this affects the neurotransmitters in the brain. So if we're trying to optimize someone back from an injury, we want to be looking at that. We want to be checking the gut. We want to be sealing those barriers, and we want to be sealing the brain barrier and the gut barrier, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, everything starts in the gut, as you know, like we doing a microbiome assessment, and there are different ones, and we can argue probably till the cows come home, which is the best test and all that. And every clinician's got their favorite, but there's some really good data that we can pull from there that can actually help us. But, you know, just understanding that gut-brain axis, when you have an injury there, it really does affect the gut and vice versa. When you have a gut injury, it will affect your brain. And this is another really good point. And sorry, I've got verbal diarrhea.
We love it.
When you have a leaky gut and you have inflammation in the body, right, and you have all these pathogens and things happening and LPS getting through, and which is lipopolysaccharide, which is a very toxic neurotoxin, this can cause a brain injury as well.
Ah, right.
Right?
Without the impact.
Without the impact. So there are different types of brain injuries. There's traumatic brain injuries from an impact like that, and then there are non-traumatic brain injuries, which have come from environmental toxins or from leaky guts or from anything that we're exposed to, viruses, of course. You know, we would have known from, you know, COVID or the brain fog that people were experiencing. What is brain fog? It's neuroinflammation, right? So we need to be thinking of brain injuries. All of us have some level of brain injury because we're living in a toxic freaking world that we live in. So we're all get and age, you know, things that start to break down as we get older, the barriers start breaking down and so on. And that leads to inflammation in the brain, which is a brain injury. And then there's the non-traumatic and there's the traumatic types, and there's strokes and there's aneurysms and there's concussions and TBIs and all of that plethora. But just to put it into that same bucket, if you like, that these are also brain injuries, these toxins and things that we're exposed to.
So it sounds like we've got the initial impact, which is damage point one. Then the brain itself bounces off its own skull, which is impact, you know, two, three, four, five, however long it could kind of get bounces back and forth. I'm curious for parents and anybody that's listening that gets a head injury, how long should they be checking in after the initial impact to look for evidence of things not going right? Is it days? Oh. Is it weeks? Is it months?
Years. Years.
Years.
So this is a really good point, right? We often don't equate some of the symptoms that we're seeing in populations, right? Someone's coming in and they're depressed and they've got gut issues or they've got fill in the blank, Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis. All of these things can be, not always, but can be a downstream effect of a concussion that was 10, 20, 30 years ago. Right.
Well, when you were describing things before in regards to the excitatory mechanism sort of going crazy and then GABA, you know, the inhibitory stuff chilling out, I instantly thought of the dopaminergic cells in Parkinson's disease. That's exactly what I thought.
Exactly. You're onto it. You're connecting the dots already, right? So multiple sclerosis, ALS, all of these things can be, that you know, there can be a number of reasons why they happen. There's genetic, there's other factors, but a person who has had brain injuries is much higher for example, I've forgotten the exact statistics, but, you know, like something like 30% higher chance of getting multiple sclerosis, et cetera, et cetera. There's all these correlations that, you know, can't off the top of my head tell you, but there's dementia. We know rugby players, right? They often, you know, get to their 50s after their career in their 20s and they had multiple concussions and now at 50 and they've got early onset dementia, or they've got Parkinson's, or they've got multiple sclerosis, or they've got ALS. And that is, you know, can be correlated back to those head injuries. So, and even on a smaller scale, you know, like you had a concussion, say, a year ago, and you might have been okay afterwards. You had a couple of weeks where you're feeling a bit off, you had some headaches, you're like, you know, a bit off your game, you're fatigued, but, you know, you came right. You didn't actually come right, probably. Your brain reprogrammed itself to cope, but you used up some of your reserve capacity.
Yeah.
So another example from mum's life, right? So she's had these massive brain traumas. She not only had the aneurysm and the stroke, she had a couple of dozen concussions as she relearned to walk. And she's got normotensive hydrocephalus, which is the one thing I can't do anything about. I'm actually going to see the neurosurgeon about that today. She's got water on the brain. This affects her vestibular system, which makes her much more prone to falls, right?
Right.
So she's had multiple concussions because of that, the falls that she's had. Then she's had a hip break 6 months ago. That is also a brain injury.
Right.
And you ask me, how the hell is a hip a brain injury? Because when you do an operation, number one, the anesthetic. Number two, the actual hip break causes a massive inflammatory cascade in the body, right? It's all coming back to inflammation, low-grade inflammation and acute inflammation.
Yeah.
Why does the body make inflammation? Because we need it in the first instance to initiate the immune response and the repair, okay? But if it stays elevated, that's when it leads to things like arthritis and cardiovascular disease and all the other sorts of things and brain damage. So with her having a hip break, because of her reserve capacity is zilch, because she's been through also cancer, brain cancer, you know, she's had brain surgeries, she's had concussions, she's had all these things. So when she had a hip break, that affected massively her brain. She went basically offline, you know, for the want of a better description. Her intellectual capacity went right down. Drugs, surgery, where you're cutting into the tissue, causing a massive inflammatory response, the anesthetic itself, the trauma itself, all of these are brain injuries. So if you're going into a surgery, you need to prepare your body for a brain injury, right?
Yeah, well, and it makes sense to me in the sense that even sometimes in winter when people get colds or the flu and they get run down, you get that feeling of old injuries showing up again, like in a subtle way.
Yeah.
And so what I'm thinking of as you're talking about this is if you've had anything in the brain previously and you weaken the body somewhere else, inflammation is going to go straight to where the damage was done before.
Yep, and it's an interleukin 6, for example. Interleukin 6 is a well-known cytokine that increases with age anyway, and it's an inflammatory cytokine, and it's increased whenever you have a virus. So when you get a cold and your interleukin 6 goes up and you can't think and you just feel like you're dumb and you've got brain fog, and that's interleukin 6. You're irritable, you're shitty. And then after a few days, that goes away as the virus goes or whatever. And that is going away because the interleukin 6 is coming back down, right? But if it stays elevated, which as we age, it stays elevated. So interleukin 6 is one of the key ones. And then tumor necrosis factor alpha, TNF alpha, is another one that's a major one that stays elevated as we get older. These are the cytokines of aging, right? And then we have interleukin 1 beta, which is another bad player. Then we have one called TGF beta, which has positive and negative effects. In fact, all of these have positive and negative effects. We need the inflammation in the acute phase. We don't want the inflammation in the chronic ongoing phase. So, but just to come back to that, you know, the hip break, another trauma, her reserve capacity because of what she's been through and because she's 82 is very limited. So she goes offline, her brain goes offline. And so I can tell very quickly, even if there's an infection. So like last night, I looked in her eyes and I went, oh, they've got something going on here. So, you know, this morning I've just done an intravenous vitamin C to try to get, because I can see an infection is starting to impact her brain and I can see it very quickly because I, you know her inside out, like a mum knows their newborn baby type of thing. But it's that reserve capacity that's impacted. So when you have an injury in your 20s, say, and then you had another one in your 30s, these are all taking away your reserve capacity to recover. And then the outcome of it is in your 50s, that's when you'll start to see the major issues start to come as the age-related side of it also starts to climb, right? And these inflammatory cytokines start to climb. And so we need to be proactive, is coming back to the solution.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, I have a hyperbaric oxygen therapy clinic here in New Zealand, and I sell hyperbaric oxygen chambers and rent them, and huge fan of hyperbaric.
Coincidentally, I'm actually booked in for my session today.
Ah, good.
To go and do that.
And the thing is, Maddie, you need a lot, right? You don't need one. Unfortunately, it's not a one and done thing, hyperbaric. I mean, one session will be, of course, a benefit.
I go most weeks, so.
Good. Yeah, what you need to think about is them close together. I'd rather you did a block of 20 back to back to back, you know, maybe 5 days a week.
In 1 week? Okay.
Say over a month, right? Then you went once a week for 20 weeks. Much more powerful to have that close together, that you start to get the epigenetic changes happening. So we have, once again, when you hop into a hyperbaric, just for those listening who don't know what hyperbaric is, it's a chamber that they use for dive injuries when, you know, like when you dive and you come up too quick and you get the bends. Well, that's where it was originally used. But we use it where you put on an oxygen and you actually take in the equivalent of being X amount of meters underwater, and that has got more pressure. So typically the clinics range between 1.5 atmospheres and up to 3 atmospheres, usually is the sort of therapeutic range that the clinics use. Different depths or different pressures for different ailments. You have the hyperoxygenation that's happening while you're in the actual chamber. And one of the things that I'd recommend you do, and I don't know if your clinic does it, but there's a protocol that's just come out of Israel in the last year from Dr. Shai Efrati, using protocols of 20 minutes on the mask and 5 minutes off the mask. Are you doing that protocol?
No, I'm just in the chamber for 50 minutes straight.
Okay. So do this, do 20 minutes on, 5 minutes off, another 20 minutes on, another 5 minutes off as part of your thing. And you can, you know, I can send you the research on it. What that does is creates a hyperoxic, hypoxic protocol, right? And that means you are getting a lot of oxygen and then a relatively low amount of oxygen. And that creates signaling changes in the body, which makes it much more powerful than you just staying on it the whole time. This is recent research.
It's kind of like resting in between doing a deadlift, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like that kind of idea of like go heavy, take a couple of minutes off, let the blood come back into the muscles and begin that healing and then pick it up again. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's creating a signal change that you have a lot of oxygen and then you have a relative deficit of oxygen. You've still got more oxygen than you would have at sea level, but it's the relative change that causes this positive response, because it's a message to the genes to turn on and off, specific genes, can't tell you which, to turn on and off and have epigenetic changes. So that's the protocol we now adopted in the clinic. And that is much more effective than just staying on it the whole time. It's the up and down. There's also a machine called a CVAC, which is much more lesser known. A CVAC goes up to altitude and down within seconds, like it's going up, down, up, down, up, down, and that creates like a vacuum pulling effect, which is another therapeutic mechanism that we can, really good for lymphatic. I'd love to have one of those, but those cost like a couple of hundred grand, so going to happen anytime soon. My friend's actually got one, and it used to be Tony Robbins' one, and she's got it down in Dunedin. She runs a big clinic down there. I would love to get that, because we're dealing with hydrocephalus, and my thought is, which is just my connecting of dots, not anyone else's, but that would help with the lymphatic drainage or the glymphatic drainage problem that we've got in mum's brain. But getting off topic.
Yeah. No, that's interesting.
Yeah. So that's what hyperbaric does, right? And so it's hyperoxygenating the body. It's also releasing more stem cells, and stem cells go into the body and then look for the damaged parts of the body, hone in on that damage and replaces the cells that are damaged and kicks them out, and they go off and die, right? The bad damaged cells. And so that can help repair the brain. You get more stem cells to the brain and other parts of the body. It's a full body treatment, by the way. It's not just with the brain. And the other thing it's doing is lowering those cytokines, lowering those inflammatory cytokines. and increasing the good cytokines, the anti-inflammatory, like the IL-10. So it's doing, working on all these, and it creates angiogenesis. So it actually creates new blood vessels. So if you have enough treatments, and again, you have to have a block of treatments, it creates new capillaries. And I've actually seen it on, you know, like someone who needed a stent in their heart, and then they went and had hyperbaric treatment in my chamber, and then the body rerouted around the blockage.
Amazing. That's impressive.
Yeah, it's impressive. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But you have to have enough. And what I say is, so the epigenetic changes that happen, so you've got the acute thing that you're in there, you're getting hyperoxygenated, all that sort of stuff's happening. But if you go repeatedly and expose yourself repeatedly to this stressor, because it's a hermetic stress, you get epigenetic changes happening, which is long-term ongoing changes where the genetics are actually, you know, affected and changed. So really slowing the aging process down.
Mum, mother, grandmother, nan, nana, and women with no kids. Have I got your attention? So I want you to imagine something. Go with me here. Imagine a life where even when you wake up tired and the kids are driving you mad and work sucks and things are problematic, that you're still in control of your food and you still make healthy choices without giving up and binging on chocolate and wine and saying, I'll try again tomorrow. It might be hard to imagine, but having freedom with your food is absolutely possible. And it starts by getting three things right. One, having a supportive community, building a strong connection with fellow emotional eating warriors. Two, having the right information delivered in the right way. And three, having a guide that can shine a light on the right path and have your back along the way. And that's me. Those three things are exactly what we've got for you inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group for people just like you wanting to end their emotional eating and feel good in their own skin again. And currently, it's free to join. The link is in the show notes below. If you've struggled with diets or felt powerless around food, you're not alone. But let me assure you, this is a community that understands your battles and is ready to empower you into action. So what can you expect on the inside? Well, we have posts and content that push you a little out of your comfort zone. We do Facebook Lives, have interactive Q&A session, and it's simply a safe space to face your food challenges and be honest without concern of being judged. If you decide to join us, I have a complimentary How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook for you as well, completely free. The Healthy Mums Collective thrives on support, authenticity, and experience-based practices. It's a community, so the beautiful people in it is where the magic comes from. To join us and be a part of that magic, head to the show notes, click the link, breeze through a few quick questions, and you'll be in the Healthy Mums Collective before you know it. Again, the link is in the show notes below. I'll see you in the DMs or on the welcome post in just a few moments. Before we get into more of the solution stuff, I'm just curious, what are the most important sports or the most obvious sports, so sort of boxing and stuff like that, but which sports should we really be considering as high risk for this kind of injury, these brain injuries?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, right? Because anything depends on where, you know, like skateboarding and you fall off your skateboard and smash your head. Yeah. One that you may not think of is soccer, you know, like football, where they're heading the ball.
Is that enough of
That's
an impact
enough.
To do
that,
some damage?
That is most definitely enough to do damage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is the other myth that people think you have to have had a major brain injury and been unconscious for it to be a brain injury. Absolutely false. This could be a minor and it could be like you're getting lots of minor hits like hitting the ball or, you know, you just clumsy and knock yourself on the head quite a lot, you know, bang into the cupboard or whatever, things like all of those things, they do add up. And of course, the bigger, but the more repeated these things are, the more exponential that problem becomes.
For sure.
So that's one that not a lot of people think with soccer that would be a risky one, right? Even things like roller coasters. I wouldn't go on a roller coaster anymore now knowing what I know.
Is it the whiplash?
Yeah, well, yep. And it, yeah, the brain's going forward, but you've stopped. The tearing and the G forces, so flying, you know, like the Air Force guys, and the, you know, that they're exposed to this sort of problem.
Well, that just made me think as well. So I also race go karts. I did last night. But the Formula One drivers, it's well known that race car drivers have extremely strong necks, so that their head at those G forces is not going back and forth so much. So I'm wondering if, race car drivers as well, possibly that don't have neck support, are in that category too.
Oh, yeah, possibly. I haven't looked into that, but that would be a strong possibility. Anywhere there's G-forces. Or the other one is, you know, the guys on the roads with the jackhammers.
Oh, yeah.
That's a brain injury, right there.
Wow.
So, yeah. So anything that's causing like this Like even Dr. Mark Gordon, who I just interviewed last week, who's a world-leading expert on brain injuries and hormone, using hormones, which we'll get into in a sec, to help, says even vibration plates, you know, like, yeah, you know, the vibration plates that you're good for bone density, maybe not for brains because they're being shaken, if it's a really intense one at least, you know.
Well, this makes me also think of, you know, football that they play in the US where they're in, you know, suits and they've got helmets, but still with those helmets, they're still doing severe brain damage. So absolutely, the question becomes, are helmets useful at all in this conversation?
I mean, I wouldn't, you know, pretend to know what the difference in impact, but I would say that they're probably more dangerous just from logic, because you've actually got a harder thing, you know, than when you're just two guys running into each other.
And your level of confidence probably goes 10x because you're covered in protective gears. Yeah. So you're like, I'm invincible.
Yeah, and we're falling off a bike, right, and you got your helmet and you think, oh, I'm fine because I've got a helmet. No, it's the whiplash effect that you're forgetting. It's not just the impact of actually, you know, which the helmet would help with, but it's the shearing of the axons and stuff in the brain because of that velocity change, you know. So anything where you've got vibration or velocity change, but yeah, those would be the main ones. The other one is, like, I gave myself a hypoxic brain concussion from racing at altitude.
Oh, right.
Right. So altitude is also, so hypoxia is another form of brain injury. So if you nearly drown, for example, and you don't get enough oxygen, or your heart stops beating and they have to resuscitate you, what happens? Most of those people are brain damaged.
Yeah, straight into the tank.
In some way, shape.
Straight into the hyperbaric oxygen tank.
Straight into the hyperbaric if you can get it. Yeah, exactly. Because that will recover that. And why? Because it's stopping that inflammatory biochemical cascade from exploding in your brain, so to speak.
So we've obviously touched on the hyperbaric oxygen therapy as a useful tool. Like, what are the other things that we should be adding into the mix? Because I know that, like, you sent me a few protocols last year for supplements to get on. So what should we be doing from, like, you know, we've seen a massive collision, the kids are on the football, you know, field, big collisions happened. What's the sort of 1, 2, 3, week one, week two? Right.
Yeah, I mean, I probably should have had the list in front of me with the, you know, the protocols, but big fan of plasmalogens. Plasmalogens are a special type of oil. It's like omega-3 oils, but on steroids. Mm-hmm. It's not a good expression, but you know what I mean. Dr. Dayan Goodenow, plasmalogen scientist, who's brought out a book called Breaking Alzheimer's, and he uses it in autism. He actually uses it in cancer. Plasmalogens are in the membranes of the cells, and they're like the firefighter, like the water, if you like. So say your house is on fire. You go with the water and you put the fire out. Well, that's the plasmalogens. These are in the membranes, and they help maintain the membrane of the cell. And they are sacrificed whenever there is a problem, a virus, inflammation, brain injury. They are sacrificed basically to put the fire out, which is fine if we have enough plasmalogens to refill the tank, but most of us start running low on plasmalogens. We make plasmalogens in our own cells, but as we age and the peroxisomes don't make as much plasmalogens as they used to. Plasmalogens are also very high in things like breast milk, and this is why it's very important for babies to get breast milk. One of the reasons, colostrums, you know, all that sort of stuff, but plasmalogens are a big piece of that. So having plasmalogens, there's two types, there's Glia and there's Neuro, there's two supplement forms that Dr. Dayan Goodenow's brought out. And these can be put in one, let me get this the right way around. One helps the myelin sheath, which is the glia. And it, so you would have heard, like, in multiple sclerosis, the myelin sheath starts to unravel. The myelin is like an insulation wrap around a wire in the brain, you know, the neurons in the brain. And this starts to unravel if you've got something like multiple sclerosis, but also just as we get older, the myelin sheaths are not so good. And that means that the transmission is not, you know, doing as well. The connection of the neurons talking to each other isn't as good. So the glia repairs the myelin sheath. But that's what it sort of does. And then the neuro, which is another form of plasmalogen, increases the power of that frequency, the connection between the two neurons so that they can talk to each other. So you put these two into the mix. So I have a podcast on my, you know, an interview on my podcast with Dr. Dayan. If anybody wants to reach out to me to find out more about plasmalogens, I can help them out. Yeah, autism, it's been used for Alzheimer's, cancer, as I said, but just as we're aging, trying to protect our brain from dementias and all of that would be a good thing. Dr. Michael Lewis, who I interview next week, he is a fish oil expert in brain injuries, and he's used high dose, good quality triglyceride, DHA, EPA combination fish oils. Mm-hmm. You don't want crappy fish oils, by the way. I can explain there's ethyl esters and then there's triglyceride and phospholipid forms. You want either the triglyceride or the phospholipid forms of a combination of EPA and DHA, which are two forms. One's more for the cardiovascular, one's for the neuro, but both are very, very important omega-3s. And these are, again, part of that membrane story. And these, when he has like sort of mainlined fish oils into massively brain damaged people in ICU, you know, in car accidents and things, he's managed to save people's lives just with fish oil without even all the other sort of stuff, just looking at fish oil. He's written a book on it. I'm blanking on the title right now, but if you look up Dr. Michael Lewis, he's actually a colonel in the military, but I will be having him on next week.
Amazing.
So fish oils in any case, but make sure you don't buy the cheap ethyl ester. You don't get the pharmaceutical ones from the doctor either. They're ethyl ester form that can't be absorbed by the body. You need the triglyceride or the phospholipid form. So you need to know what companies to get it off, right? Mm-hmm. And read the packet. And you want about, he said, like a base dose for the average human should be about 3,000 milligrams a day. And if you are, he's got protocols in his book. So I probably should just leave it at that. Go to the protocols because there are much higher doses. Now,
I wonder if phytoplanktons would work as well.
So krill. Krill is another. Yeah, krill is another one that's meant to be. There's debate. Like some people say it's more effective. Other scientists say no, it's less effective.
Yeah, because my understanding of the phytoplankton is that is where the fish get their omegas from. They eat it, right?
Yes, so it's
like the the non-fish digested version.
Yeah, so algae is another, you know, possible place to get it if you're vegan and you don't want, you know, animal products or anything. But yeah, there's a lot of debate and nuance there. So krill definitely is something to put on your radar. But in any case, not a $5 fish oil from the supermarket.
Yeah.
Don't do that, okay?
Yeah.
Because you will get oxidized. So fish oil oxidizes very quickly. If you put a fish out in the sun for an hour, it's going to go off, right? And that's because of the double bonds in the fat. And the double bonds make it bendy and flexible, which is great, but it also makes it very oxidizable. And that makes, if you get oxidized fish oils, then you will do more damage and more inflammatory stuff to your body than you want. So you do not want cheap stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I could mention a couple of brands. You know, there's Nordic Naturals are very well known, very good quality. Designs for Health have a very good one. That's one I use. But yeah, fish oils and plasma allergens, again, fat, good fats. The other thing I'd put in is ketones. I'm a huge fan of ketones, exogenous ketones. So we've all heard about the keto diet, which is great for some people. And certainly if you've had a brain injury, your ability to uptake glucose is impaired. So that means that you become insulin resistant basically overnight just from a brain injury. So you can have metabolic dysregulation, which a lot of people have, and insulin resistance. You and I know that sort of story. But just from the brain injury, you can become insulin resistant in the brain. And so you want to go a keto-based diet, at least, with good high fats, good quality, you know, whole foods and things like that, but staying away from any of the processed, which we should anyway, any ultra-processed sugar, you know, anything that's high sugar, you want to stay away from. Now, our brains use glucose, but their ability to uptake the glucose when you've had a brain injury, that transport mechanism is impaired. When we have ketones in the mix, and there are ketones that we take, that's what we call exogenous ketones, and then there are endogenous ones that we make in our bodies, and the exogenous is the one that we drink, excess, it's from outside. These are an alternative fuel source for your brain cells, amazing fuel source for your brain cells. If you go and have some exogenous ketones today, you'll be like, ding. I've had some this morning, so that's why I'm like, ding. At the moment.
You're on one.
I'm on them. It's my speed. Mum is on high dose of ketones. She's on 12 grams three times a day, which is a little pricey, but because of her massive brain damage, I have to do that because that's basically the only food her brain's going to get because, you know, her brain ability to get glucose is really, really impaired. So, and if I don't give her the ketones, she's just, you know, goes offline. So, yeah, that's ketones. N-acetylcysteine, which is a precursor to glutathione, is a really important one. Mm-hmm. Glutathione is our master antioxidant in the body. Then there are, Dr. Mark Gordon is the expert to talk to on this one, and I had him on last week. Often our hormones are impacted when we have a brain injury. Now, we have a pituitary gland, and this is like an upside down ice cream cone in the middle of our brain. And when you shake the brain, this gets easily damaged, put it that way. And when that's damaged, the pituitary gland, and sometimes the hypothalamus, then our hormone production can get impacted. So this could work out that you have low testosterone, you know, or you can actually become infertile because you're not producing, you know, all your sex hormones. Estrogen can be impacted. Growth hormone. Growth hormone is a major one that can be impacted, which has massive implications for aging and everything else, right? So, and this is a complicated conversation. We do put in like progesterone as a protective hormone. And so straight after a brain injury, having progesterone for males and females is very neuroprotective. So that's something that, you know, you can put in 200 to 400 sort of milligrams of progesterone as a sort of a well-used dosage range. But, you know, get personal advice on this. People don't, you know, go willy-nilly yourself.
Absolutely.
But, so hormones need somebody who knows what they're doing. But just to put on your radar that if after 6 months after a brain injury and all of a sudden, you know, you're a young guy and, you know, you've got no libido and you've got no energy and you can't put on muscle mass and you're like, what the hell's going on? I bet your pituitary gland's not doing its thing and it's not producing your hormones. So you need to get your hormone assessments done and find out. Yeah. And that can be massive change, game changer.
And there's a couple of other things, just want to reel them off before we wrap up, but that you sent me was the curcumin, the vitamin C, the vitamin D3 and K2 were in there as well. So yeah, adding those to the mix would be super beneficial.
Yeah. And just, I've actually been working on, I've got a company, Avum Labs, which is our biotech longevity supplement company. And we're bringing out a product in about 8 weeks' time called Rejuvenate. So I've been working on immunosenescence. So the immune system, as we get older, ages. And this we call immunosenescence. And the immune system is what keeps us safe from every damn thing in the universe, right? That's trying to kill us. And there's a lot, you know. So this is viruses. This is cancer. This is when you have a brain injury and you're overreacting and you've got too much inflammatory cytokines. So what we want to do is to focus as we, you know, head over the age of 20 even on our immune system and modulating, not boosting, modulating our immune system. And there are not many products out there that help modulate the immune system. Mm. So you get things like echinacea, which are really great, you know, for as a herb, for example, that's really good if you've got a cold and you want to boost your immune system. But generally, you don't want to be boosting your immune system. You want to be modulating it. Most of our immune systems are actually overdoing it. You know, we have the initial insult or virus or bacteria or whatever the case may be, infection, and we want those inflammatory cytokines and we want our echinaceas and we want our things like that. But then we want to modulate it and bring down that low-grade chronic inflammation that accelerates aging and causes all these other problems like the brain stuff, the gut stuff, everything is impacted. Arthritis, cardiovascular, all of these systems are impacted when you have an immune system that's not balanced and modulated. So our product is basically, just briefly, it's called Rejuvenate, and we've got 15 years worth of clinical research behind what we've got in it. So one of the products is a colostral whey extract. So colostrum is the very first food that the mother gives to the baby, right? And it only comes out in the very first couple of days after birth. And it gives the baby everything that it needs to speed up the growth of that child, the development of the organs, the development of the brain, and the immune system. The immunoglobulins that come from the mother then get transferred into the baby. Now, this is nature's absolute superfood, right? And the thing is, we now know that it's not just great for babies, but for adults. So really good when you're trying to heal and seal barriers. So going back to that conversation we had earlier on barrier health, with the eyes, the reproductive tract, the lungs, the esophagus, the, you know, gut, all of these barriers need to be sealed and healed. And most of our barriers, as you rightly pointed out, are not looking too good in our environment that we live in and the food that we have. So it does that, and it provides more immunoglobulins. It helps feed the right microbiome, so the bifido and lactobacteria species especially, but it's a selective antimicrobial, so it doesn't kill off any of the bad bacteria. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, that's how nature developed it, right? And then we have another ingredient called immune defense protein, which is actually a skim milk extract. It's got a 50 bioactive proteins in it. So we've taken everything else out, the lactose, the casein, the fat, and left it just with the stuff that does all the great stuff, you know, without any of the allergens and all of the other problematic things that can be in it. So in, you know, it takes like 10 liters of milk to get 1 gram of this immune defense protein. And so this is a very powerful immune modulator, it gives you back the function of a younger thymus gland.
Okay.
So we have a big thymus gland in our chest, right? Which is huge when we're babies, grows with us until about puberty. And it's like the boot camp for T cells that come out of your bone marrow. The T cells go to the thymus and they get educated in how to be good T cells and recognize bad pathogens and, you know, create antibodies with the B cell antibodies and so on and so forth. And this is one of the reasons why I'm not a fan of vaccines in general, but if you were an older adult and you got a vaccine, then you are very unlikely to respond very well to it because you won't create or you won't mount an antibody response because your thymus is not working properly.
Yeah.
Right. And our thymus goes offline. And we've done research on this where they've, you know, done flu vaccines where they've shown that the antibody response is much stronger. In other words, we've given you back the function of a younger immune system. We're not giving you back your thymus gland permanently. That'd be great. But at least, you know, while you're taking this, you get an increase in the production of something called CD69, which makes for killer T cell activation. And you get a proliferation of lymphocytes and so on and so forth. Long story short, this is a bloody good formulation. It's what I wanted for my family, right? And my own aging immune system, and nobody was doing it. So I've been spent the last 18 months working on this formulation. And we also have canosic acid in it, which decreases something called CXCL9, which is a chemokine that's been identified by Stanford University in their 1000 Immunomes Project, which is an immunosenescence project looking at markers in the immune system for us to target. And CXCL9 was one of the main ones, and that's what canosic acid reduces. So we've got that in there, and then we've got kawakawa, which is a traditional Māori medicine that increases the interleukin-10, which is an anti-inflammatory cytokine, decreases IL-6, which we've talked about before, and TNF-alpha. You know, in brief, that's what it does.
So amazing.
It's the ultimate freaking immune system support.
Well, so, where can everybody find you and this stuff online? Like, where do we send them?
So Avum Labs, my biotech company, that product's coming out in about 8 weeks. So reach out to me and get on my list and I'll let you know when it drops.
By the time this episode comes out, it'll be ready to go.
Yeah. It'll be avumlabs.co.nz, A-E-V-U-M, A-E-V-U-M, avumlabs.co.nz. We'll be able to grab that. And for me, just lisatarmati.com.
Mm-hmm.
And my podcast is Pushing the Limits. So
fantastic.
Which Maddie's been on and he'll be on again.
Yeah, I'll put all the links for that down below. Like, this conversation's been amazing, and I think a lot of people with kids now are going to be doing a lot more to, you know, make sure that their head injuries in sport are better, and the same for all of us adults that are still trying to pretend like we're young.
We are. We'll fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
But I think as a last thing, I do have a lot of interviews with the experts that have taught me the stuff I know.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody wants to, you know, reach out to me and I can give you a list of those, because they're really worth listening to, including the one I'll be doing this week. But yeah,
amazing.
And you've got Dr. John Lewis coming on your show shortly too, haven't you?
Yeah, I do.
And that daily brain care is another thing that I have in the mix, and very good as well. So yeah, there's another one for you that's very, especially for Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis.
I'm looking forward to that conversation.
Yeah, he's a rock star.
But before we wrap up, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
Well, I think we just covered that. Yeah, I mean, our number one longevity hack is exercise.
Yes, I agree. Right?
Exercises, like, you know, if you've got no money and you've got no resources, but you can exercise, then do that, because that will slow the aging process down more than anything, but not over-exercising, right? Yeah. It's a Goldilocks zone, and there's a genetic piece there, what type of exercise you should do, and, you know, but yeah, that's probably the number one easy hack that doesn't cost anybody anything.
Yeah, perfect. Amazing. Well, Lisa, thanks for coming to hang out and have this conversation, and I hope to see you really soon.
I really enjoyed it, Maddie, as always. Thanks,
mate. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.